and everything else falls away. And you're like a tree losing its leaves in the autumn so beautifully. Our pain is in denying love. A boundary is an act of selfishness. There's nothing you wouldn't give to anyone if you weren't afraid. Of course, you can't be generous ahead of your time. But when you meet your thoughts with understanding, you discover that there's nothing to lose. So eventually, there's no attempt at protection. Giving everything you have becomes a privilege. The only true love affair is the one with yourself. I am married to me, and that's what I project onto everyone. I love you with all my heart. You don't even have to participate, so there's no motive in I love you. Isn't that fine? I can love you completely, and you have nothing to do with it. There's nothing you can do to keep me from the intimacy that I experience with you. When I say I love you, it's self-love. There's no personality talking. I'm only talking to myself. Love is so self-absorbed that it leaves no room for any other. It's self-consuming always. There's not a molecule separate from itself. In the apparent world of duality, people are going to see it as a you and a me, but in reality, there's only one, and even that isn't true. The voice within is what I'm married to. All marriage is a metaphor for that marriage. When I make a commitment, it's to my own truth, and there's no higher or lower. Will you have this man to be your husband? I will. And I may change my mind. That's as good as it gets. I'm married only to God. Reality. That's where my commitment is. It can't be to a particular person, and my husband wouldn't want it any other way. Unless you marry the truth, there is no real marriage. Marry yourself, and you have married us. We are you. That's the cosmic joke.
Open yourself to the Tao, then trust your natural responses, and everything will fall into place.
I didn't have a spiritual teacher. Of course, I've had many teachers, from my mother to my ex-husbands to my children to the stranger in rags on a corner in Santa Monica. But the privilege of not having an official teacher is that there's no tradition, so there's nothing to aspire or be loyal to. This one that I happen to be doesn't have to look like anything but what it is. It can afford to be a fool. It doesn't know anything but love. It's God-delighted. It comes to take the mystery and importance out of everything. It takes the push and the time out of it. I watch my granddaughter Marley, 11 months old, as I sing along with her musical toy, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. She looks at me with amazed delight and then begins to dance. The dance happens beyond her control. Her little diapered rear end wiggles and she pops up and down and her arms fly into the air. I am watching dance being invented. It's in its pristine state. It's happening for the very first time. And I can't help joining her. She, too, is my teacher. We're dancing together at the beginning of the human race, as if this were the first dance ever danced in the history of the world. She's not trying to do it right or to impress anyone. She is pure nature. And I am the same. Beyond control, I begin to move in the same way. I pop up and down, and my arms fly into the air. The laughter is pouring out of me. I feel so thrilled. It's the thrill of natural dance coming from her, from me, from her. The song stops. She looks up at me, then down at the musical toy. She presses the button to begin the song again. It doesn't happen. She is figuring out how to reproduce the miracle. I watch as she presses the same button 2, 3 times, and finally, with enough force to make the music exist. At the sound of the first note, she looks at me. Her face lights up, her body begins to move, and the dance begins again. My dear old white German Shepherd, Kerman, was another teacher of mine, one of my greatest teachers after I got a clue in 1986. There were no conditions to her love. Toward the end of her life, her hindquarters became crippled and she couldn't walk, so when people called her, she would just drag herself along the floor to meet them. As she was dying, she began to bleed at the mouth. I called all three of my children home, and I said, "If you can't find a reason, why not? I'm going to put her down." When they saw how far gone she was, they agreed that that was the best thing. So we got her favorite food, and we gave her a big party with everything she loved, and we weren't careful with her. The kids wrestled with her and called her, and she crawled to them with a puppy smile on her face. She dragged herself across the room, apparently delighted. She didn't seem to know about pain. She didn't know about anything but giving. When the time came to take her to the vet, we all went, 9 or 10 people, all of her friends and family. We stood around her, and my son Ross bent down to the table, eye to eye with her. The doctor gave her the shot. A moment passed, she didn't move. And when Ross said, "She's gone," we all knew it. She had been there, and then she wasn't. There was no her left. There was no her to say goodbye to. It was very sweet. I've also learned from the trees, walking in the redwood forest where the deer didn't run from me. I saw trees that had fallen over from wind or lightning. They appeared to be dead, and yet there was a whole world on them and in them, moss and insects and all sorts of hidden life. Even in death, they were creating and giving what was left. Nature withholds nothing from itself until there is nothing to give. It's like my white shepherd with a smile on her face and how when I called her, she would come dragging her hindquarters, blood dripping from her mouth. That's what we're all doing, whether or not we realize it. People have seen me crawl when the body is apparently exhausted. I never have to do that or anything else ever again. I do it because it delights.